Oh, baby, today is an interesting day. It's kind of a sad day, but also an exciting day. That might sound confusing, but this show's been around coming on 4 years. We've been together for a while. Lucas has joined us once Billy had to depart, but we put a lot of work in. Guys, whether it was working with the Dynasty Vipers, which shout out them, True North, Triple Play, we have had a lot of help and a lot of great people influence this program. We have had great guests, whether it was Austin Gale or really anyone, Scott Barrett, Graham Barfield, just incredible runs of guests. And it sucks that this show as we know it is over. This is going to be the last time the show is the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. It's over. It's done. We're not going away, though. We have, when we say partnered, I mean really partnered. The Full Tilt Dynasty podcast is going to be fantasypoints.com, their flagship Dynasty content program. Moving forward, this show will only be available live at Fantasy Points on their YouTube channel and at fantasypoints.com. If you're a subscriber to Full Tilt and you haven't subscribed over there to YouTube, go and do that. But we will be releasing the replay and our segments as normal here a day after, 2 days after. But we
and you'll still get the Devi stuff. You'll still get the DFF, all the stuff that you normally get on the feed is still going to come in.
Correct. When the walkabout is back for trades halfway through the year, you'll get that here. You'll get the Devi. You'll get our shorts. Everything like that here that you subscribe for, you will still get on the channel. But the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast is no more. After this week, we will be Dynasty Points. Because, you know, got to keep it with the Fantasy Points theme. We want to shout out Scott Barrett, who his episode's on here, or created the biggest waves. We've had Graham Barfield and so many more. What it does is it gives us so much more access to other great content creators, and it really helps us reach a level that we've been trying to reach for a long time. So it's huge that Fantasy Points has that confidence in us, and I'm just excited for the ride, and I want to just shout out everyone that's listened and subscribed and commented. It couldn't do it without those guys. I'm excited. It starts next week. Like we're right in there next week, guys. I'm fired up. We've been pushing for this for a while. The chat is going wild. We love it. Yes, we will be doing some questions today. Absolutely, as always, it's for the people. Brian says is that look, it's cold in Canada. Already, TD here from literally the first stream. TD has been here the whole time. Congrats a million. Thank you so much. Obviously, Nick Fury hopping over from the Bulletproof fandom. Look, I wanted to touch on that early and just get it out of the way. But we have an amazing show the rest of the way. We have Paul Patterson, of course, from the Factory Tour. Over there at Dynasty Football Factory. We're going to bring him in. We're going to talk about aging veterans, injured veterans, and why it would be in your best interest to acquire them, or are maybe not in your best interest to acquire them if you are rebuilding. A crucial point. I'm hitting this intro again because John gets to do it. I'm hitting it twice just for my own sake, and we are going to get Paul in here, and we're going to get this final edition. This feels weird. Of the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast, the flagship program that started it all. We're getting that kicked off right now. Yeah, TD is already prepped and ready to go for Paul. You're joining us. That's at Paul_DFF. If you don't know, he is an unofficial official member of the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast, soon to be Dynasty Points, where you will make appearances. At least you better not be jumping ship on us. But thank you so much for joining us today, man. We have been doing kind of a breakdown of Dynasty rosters and what people should do if they're kind of tweeners. I feel like this is a great topic of discussion. We get this all the time. I know there are players that I have been trying to buy as a rebuilder left and right, so I'm excited to hear your take. Again, if you're just tuning in, I am your host with the most time on his hands. I am Thomas Tipple. Joining me as always is Lucas Gilbert and also Jacob Sanderson, the man that makes you think about thinking. Gentlemen, let's kick this off. We don't do news very often, Paul. Well, I think we've talked about this before. There's a billion other podcasts and websites.
672,351 or whatever.
That was damn close. That was damn close. It's 321, but I'll take 51. I love that. That was so great. But this news actually affects our show topic because this says aging veterans. However, you don't often get the opportunity to buy low on an aging elite rookie prospect. I know Jacob internally is crying because his face just realized where I'm going with this. But Anthony Richardson, potentially out for the year, probably out for the year, which really sucks. He's flashed legitimate elite upside. I don't feel like this is a Trey Lance elite upside situation. He showed amazing development in the pocket. So a little bit different. But let's talk about Anthony Richardson, what you think his cost is now compared to where it was last time I saw the ADP update. He was 112 in Superflex startups. Let's talk about where we think his cost is going to go, if it is going to go down, and if you should pay the price. I'll start with you, Paul.
I mean, with Richardson, those first couple of games that we were able to see from him where he was rushing for touchdowns, he was looking competent as a passer. I mean, he was easily creeping up into that top 10, top 8 conversation in Dynasty startups. It's really tough with the injury coming so early and with it being on his throwing shoulder. I feel like it does create concern, at least in the markets. I'm kind of guessing that his price will drop over the next few weeks, especially if they do announce him out for the season. But I think people are going to buy right back in as soon as the season is over. And I'm guessing he's going to be kind of that 112-201 range for most of the off season. So if you're looking for a window to buy him, it's going to be during the year when people need points on their rosters. As soon as the season's over, nobody's going to want to trade you Anthony Richardson.
Yeah. Richardson, I think the more interesting question, honestly, is what the hell you do if you have Richardson on your team and you are trying to compete. But if you want Richardson on your team, and you're, especially if you're not trying to compete, or really regardless of what you're trying to do, I almost assure you, you're going to get value gains going into the offseason on him. I will be doing my rank update tomorrow or the day after. I had him at 10 coming into in the last update, and he'll move behind Trevor, he'll move behind Stroud, he'll move behind Tua, based on them playing, and he could easily be back ahead of them by the time the offseason starts, depending on what they do the rest of the season. And I guess I'd move him behind Kyler because, man, that's kind of sad, but way better chance of Kyler Murray playing football this season than Anthony Richardson at this point. So that's kind of an interesting one, how those ships have passed in the night. I think probably where I'll end up ranking him is kind of the same tier that I've had Kyler for most of the season, which is just at the top of that group with those sub-elite receivers, your Olave, Lamb, Brown, St. Brown, Wilson, that kind of crew, where I think is his efficient value. But I'm ranking under the assumption that you care about points this year. So, as I wrote about recently, if that's not you, you should always leverage that into, getting those value gains. So you should be trading for Anthony Richardson. Just make sure you come with a reasonable offer. If you go to the contender who just lost Anthony Richardson and you're like, I'll give you a 25 first and a receiver, they don't care about that, trade them a quarterback.
So if you're sitting there at 1-5, 2-4, and you have someone like Dak Prescott on your roster, and the owner who's 4-2, 5-1, something like that, has Anthony Richardson, what sort of deal are you making to get him? Or are you even considering moving someone like Dak to go and pick up Richardson and continue to go for the basement of your league, hoping to eventually get Caleb, or I think it's still a little early to go with Drake May, but another quarterback or even Marvin Harrison Jr.
I think you're looking at a first plus in market cap between them, and probably even more than that, maybe into the offseason. So certainly if you can, especially if you can find a way to bundle up 2-point producers into Richardson and offer like a veteran receiver running back that scores points with Dak of that late first type value, go get Richardson. I'm all aboard that.
Yeah, that's like a perfect win-win kind of trade. You know, you're getting younger, you're getting the upside, they're getting somebody that should produce as a QB1 the rest of the year, some extra pieces on top of that. I think that's exactly the kind of structure you want to look at. You don't want to be, like Jacob said, offering them rookie picks or something that they can't plug into their lineup and replace that production with. So,
yeah, I have nothing to disagree with here. I think you're right in that it gets a little weird when you're talking about packaging a non-quarterback-esque player to go and get them. But in my opinion, if again, his elite upside was always tied to his rushing. So, yes, his throwing shoulder being out is a problem, but I'm not willing. We know what the internet does. The internet is running with some wild takes about how he'll never recover, and that, you know, we know the internet does this. And if you go and look through all those tweets, I guarantee they're going to be a Minshew sympathizer from like a long time ago. Don't let the fake news cloud the judgment. I think, Lucas, you hit it right on the head, right at that Dak Prescott level of quarterback tiering is where I'd be adding that first. Brian is here. He says, in our notgoingfor2.com staff league, AR plus a first went for Lamar plus 2/3. So I don't mind that at all.
That's an interesting one. Yeah. Again, Lamar's the contender. I think that's like a fair value trade. I feel like if I was, I guess it depends where you are as the tanker to me, because like there are some teams where you're already locked into 101 or maybe you're locked, you can't get 101, so you're gonna be 102, 103. Like that seems like a fair trade if the only person who has an incentive to make it is the person shedding AR because they want to score points. If I don't have any like actual incentive to shed Lamar's points into ARs, I would want more. But if that's the best deal that I can get and that's the best deal they can get and I need to shed points and they need to get points, then that sounds fine.
Yeah, I was actually in that identical situation in a league last week. Basically, I was tanking with another team, both just like horrible teams. And it's not max points, it's by standings. And we were playing each other this week. And so like we literally, I lost, I was going to say I won cause I got Caleb, but I lost the game. I scored 8 points, because there's a rule. You have to start someone that's active. So I had like Julian Hill in my lineup and like Zach Pascal. And, anyway, he had Quentin Morris.
If you're ever in that position, people, Matthew Slater is the GOAT.
I did pretty well. I had a full lineup of players and I scored 8 points, but he had Quentin Morris who caught a touchdown, which was hilarious. I had Jalen Hurts as my last like player on my team and I had to sell him. And I actually ended up selling him for Anthony Richardson, a first, a second, and like some other small thing. And like, I didn't love it. Like I would have rather not done that, but the difference between having 102 and 101 was worth it to me. So I made that move.
Well, we were talking earlier in the Full Tilt Discord about the opportunity to shed points, which is what really sparked the conversation about buying aging veterans, right? I would like to trade a quarterback on my roster if I'm a non-contender and go and get the guy who had Aaron Rodgers and a first for a quarterback or even a receiver, Brandon Ayuk, just whatever I can that has points on my roster to move down, because the price now to move from 106 projected to 102 is going to be cheaper than in April. In April, that's going to cost you 3 times the price when you can do it now. And maybe Rodgers is superhuman and he comes back in week 15 like everyone is starting to think, or he's definitely looking like he's playing next year. So not only are you equipping yourself for a better draft pick now, but you're putting yourself in a better situation to start the year next year.
It's almost like you're trying to do like a tax evasion money laundering scheme where like I'm in this league where it's similar. It's so crazy how many crazy tank offs there are in this league, you know, just for Caleb to stay in school or something. But I'm in one where similar to Paul's, it's record, and it's record, and the tiebreaker is max points four. And we had like three teams that were very aggressively doing it. And I got to the point where like, really you look at the weeks that it matters. So I was like, I'm playing one in week five, one in week nine. So I was kind of patiently waiting it out the first few weeks. And then going into week five, it's like, it's go time. Like we got to get rid of these guys. And yeah, at one point it was like, the problem was there's three of us that have been tanking. The league's been around for a few years. So a lot of the contenders had already shelved their picks. So we're mostly looking at like 2026 picks. And it's like, where else can we possibly store any semblance of roster value that won't score points for me? And anyway, one of the deals that I ended up making was exactly what you suggested. It was Derek Carr for Nick Chubb and Aaron Rodgers, where it was like, I don't know if we're getting anything out of Chubb and Aaron Rodgers. I don't even really want to make this deal. But I was like, some way to get out of Derek Carr's points and I don't have to take on any points. And like, I have something, I have some sort of fungible assets. Sure. Launder this money through Aaron Rodgers, Cayman Islands. Like let's get it done.
Yeah. Nick Chubb is another player we're going to talk about, but that's the exact, a lot of people would be scared to make that move because they're going, oh, I'm giving up a dynasty super flex quarterback for possibly nothing. Yes. But again, your goal, if you're mediocre, to escape mediocrity is to just accept bottoming out. It's way easier. Let's say, I'll say it like this. It's way easier to rebuild when you initiate it rather than when Father Time initiates it and your team's dead and you're stuck in purgatory. I think you are right, Jacob, though, with the Caleb Williams might stay in school. Now, apparently he wants team ownership stakes for whoever drafts him. It's getting wild. I mean, Lucas, you guys talk about it on the Full Tilt Devi show about NILs and how that's going to affect things. I'll be interested to see how that works. I'm going to segue this in and I'll ask you, Lucas. Nick Chubb, speaking of a player that I'm buying and Jacob mentioned, so I'm going to segue into that. Yeah. I'm buying Nick Chubb. I know he had a second surgery and his career could quite possibly be over. But Nick Chubb, if you're rebuilding, seems to be a pretty price-appropriate player, is how I'll say that. Are you buying if you are non-contending? Do you think it's over? Do you think there's any hope for a resale? What do you think about Nick Chubb and his current price and standing in the Dynasty community?
So I think right now is a really good time to be going into buying Nick Chubb. If you look at the rookies coming in, there's not any sort of dominant running backs that everyone's really excited about. It's kind of a meh class, but we are getting into this point where his value is going to go down from what it was this year. Obviously, Jerome Ford, though, hasn't completely taken over that backfield. They're giving more work to Kareem Hunt. So you can have a little bit of confidence going into next season that he should still see a role, assuming that he can come back even decently from this injury. And based off of all the injury reports, it's not near as bad as everyone thought whenever we were watching that
the
replay.
First report came in and it was like his ACL is fine, and the next report was like it's not, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he did go in for the second surgery.
So. Yeah, that makes me kind of like, if he gets that surgery now, I mean, he's probably not going to play to start the year, right? No, and he's not going to be, I mean, Brees Hall wasn't even ready to go to start the year, and he's like 6 years younger. I mean, I know Nick Chubb is like a superhuman, but I don't know. We get a hobbled Nick Chubb for 4 weeks, and then we get, I don't know. I'd buy him for like a third, but I don't know. I'm not really too keen on trying to go after him after this.
I think he's a better store of value in the third, because I just think he'll be worth more than a third at some point. Like when he's healthy, right, some teams don't want to pay a second for him. And I don't know, he's probably like a more gettable form of value than any second, except for maybe like a 26 second. And the one thing that I find kind of nice about Nick Chubb is that like when you are a when you are doing these really aggressive tanks, right? Because this league, it seems, this year seems like more than ever, there's more teams trying to tank aggressively instead of just teams that are naturally bad. And so, like, my preference, ideally, if I'm tanking, is like to not be super dependent on my league mates wanting to trade for 2025 and 2026 first the following offseason, right? Like, I would rather have, you know, I would rather consolidate a bunch of my assets into like three or four like elite pieces, add a few more with 2024 draft picks, and then we're kind of good to go. Where like maybe I want to make some moves, but like I have a mostly self-sufficient team. Hard to do that this year just because I'm often finding like I have to shed even more pieces than I want to. Teams have already moved their 24s and 25s. I'm needing to take on like 2026 first and stuff. So the nice thing with Chubb is like, if I'm on that team, right, that Derek Carr team, it's like if I traded Derek Carr for 2026 second, but now if I have Rodgers and Chubb, it's like potentially that's just two players I can use next year if I'm trying to turn this thing around. So maybe not for week one with Chubb, but I agree that Chubb is fine. I'd rather trade for him than like a third if you're selling pieces, and I think a lot of people are happy to throw him in.
Yeah. So according to Keep Trade Cut right now, they value him very similarly. I know. But it does show a nice little trend. He's valued close to an early 2025 second, which is a little high for me.
That's not the case in my opinion.
Yeah. In real world.
They're showing that his value's going up since the injury. And originally, whenever it happened, he was cratering, going into like the RB50 range, but now he's up into the RB30. So people are expecting him to be dead for forever. So you can still move on from him if, say, you're going into next offseason in the same trade that you've been talking about, Jacob, and you're wanting to try and move him for something else. I mean, at come rookie draft time, yeah, you can probably trade him for a second if you just really want to get out from under that.
Yeah, he's going to be ahead of schedule at some point in the next 12 months.
Oh, I can't wait until he's ahead of schedule.
Shape of his life, ahead of schedule. Never been more explosive. There's actually a trade, Paul, in the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast, Best Ball Dynasty, the Nerd Boys, that, I mean, you had some strong opinions on. This is actually taking that process and applying it by one of Full Tilt Discord members, actually a Goose, who I love, is a very smart player. I love this deal. We had Goose giving up, acquiring Mike Williams, also on IR, and a questionable path to returning. And then Nick Chubb, and he gave up Jacoby Myers and Desmond Ridder, who were just putting up points, just points and points and points on his team, and he yeeted them off his roster. I have no issues with this deal, trying to get points off my roster. Very interested to hear everyone else's take before we get Paul's. Because he was.
The deal's a loss. Like, I feel like there's no way around that. But I'm like definitely a. I don't know what your alternatives are. So
right.
If someone's willing to, I would say generally, I think there are more managers who refuse to sell assets that they should sell for slight losses, and then wind up down across the board by holding onto depreciators and not improving their pick value. Then there are managers who sell too low. Now, that's not to say there aren't any managers that sell too low. Paul was talking to me before on the other show about some guy who sold like Matt Stafford for 26 third, some goofy shit. Look, this to me is impossible to gauge in a vacuum. Did you have alternatives? And then what's the actual effect of the deal? If you're telling me that this one deal is going to be the difference between picking a 1-2 and 1-1, then do it. Because if you could go into the offseason and trade the 1-2 Ridder and Myers for the 1-1 Williams and Chubb, that's like an absolute no-brainer. It's just right. Like if you could have found a way to 1-1 without taking this deal, either by taking a different deal or by holding those players for another week or whatever else, like it might not have been your best alternative, but I trust that you did the work.
Well, I'm in that league. I happen to be the number one seed, no big deal. But I was trying to make a trade with Mr. Goose for these aforementioned players, and I was kind of mad when I saw this trade because I thought the offer I sent was better.
What was your shitty offer?
It really wasn't that good of an offer, but I think it was a good starting point. I said
that's my favorite. Nothing I hate more than the good starting point. That's totally special.
I think I offered him a second and Tutu Atwell and like a late pick or something. And I was like, what can we do with this? And then a couple of days later, I see this trade come across the screen. I didn't love the deal. I get why he took it though. Makes sense. Cause another team had started tanking like aggressively that same week. And so I think he was kind of feeling the heat a little bit. It's one of those deals where if Rodgers comes back and he's, you know, Rodgers again next year, then it's going to look like a fine trade, I think.
Well, and then you look at, right. So the other person would be Brian, oh my goodness. I'm trying to look at their points for while I'm here. While we are here. So Goose is only, he has 815.97 and Brian has 872.2. Right. So Myers having breakout games and Desmond Ridder accidentally scoring like 25, 30 points could definitely be the difference between 101 and 102. So if you look at it in that perspective, I think Jacob nailed that on the head. Lucas?
I mean, I think that's perfectly right. I don't think we were expecting this kind of production out of Myers. And obviously, you would like to try to get somebody who values Myers a little bit higher to be able to do something a little bit more with it, but perfectly fine with punting that down and trying to ensure that you're making sure that you get the 101, especially whenever it's that close.
I do love that example just strictly because it can be the difference between 1-1 and 1-2.
Jacoby Myers, wide receiver 1 right now.
I can't do it.
Wide receiver 12 points per game. This dude's killing it.
Incredible. Brian says, fuck, I got to hustle. He's getting out tanked here.
Paul is being in front of Jeff. Love that. Come on, bro. You don't think my 2-2 out.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
So funny. Love that. All right, next, I want to talk about another player here. This one, I don't buy that there is a dip. But then I look across some leagues and even leagues I'm in and trades get made. So there has to be some sort of a dip. I'm seeing it online, over the interwebs, in Discords. Let's talk about Justin Jefferson and the actual likelihood of acquiring Justin Jefferson and how deep down the rabbit hole you're willing to go. Because if you're a rebuilder, Jacob, I know you're ready to take off, but let me set it up for you. Yeah, I'll set it up. You guys can knock it down. If you are trading for Justin Jefferson, you're still somewhat selling the farm. If you're a rebuilder, is that something that you should actually be interested in? And I'll also say this, remembering that most of the times a rebuilder and their draft picks that they've acquired are going to be late. Like for the most part, you're projecting those picks aside from your own to be, you know, from 6 to 12, 7 to 12 in around that range. So with me setting that up, Jacob, how deep down the rabbit hole are you willing to go for Jefferson?
So I'll just name off the trades. I was involved in 2 Jefferson trades so far, and it's pretty neat that it worked out this way. It wasn't necessarily intentional, but where one I traded for him, one I traded him away, and they were both based on Chris Olave. So I think this kind of shows where I think the value is at or whatever, or where I think the team situations were. So one of these is a team where I am definitely competing, and it's a team where very, very thin wide receiver, which is like most of my leagues with analysts, because everyone just wants the roster wide receivers to score 8 points instead of running backs to score 14. And so basically like my wide receiver room was like Jefferson, Diggs, Gabe Davis, Rashee Rice, and like Alec Pierce. Like those are like the only like receivers I rostered. Anyway, so now they lose Jefferson is an absolute ass. And I think I was like a first place or second place or near the top. So that's where I moved Jefferson, thin contender. And I moved Jefferson for, what was it here? Jefferson for a Lave, a first round pick that I think is like mid to maybe late. It'll probably be a playoff team, probably not a bye playoff team. A second, and Jaleel McLaughlin. And then on the other one, where I had a team that I basically, it was kind of a mid team. And then I just had the opportunity to buy Joe Burrow for like a collection of my starters. Like I bought him for Geno, Najee, Ridley, and Kyron, which was like cool because I thought the value was incredible. But it like ripped apart my team and basically meant that I couldn't compete anymore. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm just going to like commit to a tank now. So I was like, how can I shed a lot of points in a hurry? and favor Justin Jefferson. So I moved Chris Olave, Ramondre Stevenson, Tyler Lockett, Deontay Foreman, Josh Dobbs, and Gardner Minshew for Chris Olave. And that's how you trade 10 players in 3 days, everybody. That's how you unload points.
That's absolutely wild.
I thought that both of them, if you add it all up, worked out roughly to like Olave, a first and a second-ish for Justin Jefferson, which I think is kind of efficient and I think is reasonable from both sides, but we can discuss those.
Chris Miles says, hi, Paul.
So do you think that there is actually a dip on Justin Jefferson, or is it just people are actually willing to entertain offers that aren't completely outrageous because there's not an incentive to just put him as your wide receiver one and never touch the position again?
I think Jacob likes to say he doesn't need a buy low window. He just needs an opportunity window. And right, I think exactly. That's what we have for Jefferson. I don't think maybe you're getting a little discount. Maybe people aren't asking for three firsts, right? Like maybe you can get away with, you know, let's ask this one here. If there is, this is kind of an offer that you're looking at for Justin Jefferson right now as a contender, traded as late 24-1, a 25-2, Garrett Wilson, the ghost of Treylon Burks, Quentin Johnston, in exchange for Justin Jefferson. Thoughts on this? This is a contender buying up Justin Jefferson.
Hey, I'm in this league too. This is the league where I just scored Caleb Williams. Yeah, I mean, Chris has like a super stack team and there's a bunch of other like absolute juggernaut teams, which is why he felt the need to.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah, so he like has a lot of value on this team. So I thought it was fine. I think in a vacuum, it's like pretty expensive, but it makes sense. Like, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. If you added this one up on my value chart, like you lose, but I think that it's fine to lose deals when you're consolidating into an elite piece and you have a high value team. Exactly. I've done it before and I'll do it again.
Right. And then Toronto Dave said, give me JJ over Olave plus a first and second, but it's not uncommon for people to have Olave as a top five wide receiver role. I have Olave over Garrett Wilson. So there you go.
That's what Olave is my three.
Yeah, he's right up there with me too. He's my four, but he's right there.
Tom, can I hijack this podcast as my own personal like soundboard for a trade? Because I have an offer in my inbox for Justin Jefferson.
Let's do it
right now.
Let's break it down live on air.
So
this is the last Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. I mean, we're putting it all out.
Kind of a weird league. So it's a 36 team league, three copy league. So
oh my god,
it's basically just a 12 team league, but there's three of every player. It doesn't matter. You could treat it like
a regular league.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, I have a contending team. Like I'm not a super team, but I'm the fourth seed. I don't
You're
have
the mix for the 14 seed.
Anyway, there's three divisions. They're all 12 teams. So just treat it like a regular league. I'm the fourth seed. I don't have my first, and I just lost Jefferson. So I was like trying to figure out what to do here. And I was like, look, I'll listen to offers for Jefferson. I'm probably not going to trade him unless it's for like a really, really high end asset, like a Chase or Bijan. I went to all six of the Jamar Chase / Bijan Robinson owners, and I tried to make deals with them, and they weren't having it. But I woke up today to an offer of a first round pick that looks to be 106, 107, Kyle Pitts and Christian Watson. For Justin Jefferson. It's a tight end premium league, so it has my attention. My current starting tight end is Hunter Henry, and I'm at a loss here. So it seems like a bad idea in general, like the tiering down thing, getting multiple assets, but also maybe makes sense in this case. What are we thinking?
It's going to be a no for me, dog. I just think there's better out there.
Yeah. Can you repeat it again? Sorry.
Jefferson for a mid first, Christian Watson and Kyle Pitts.
This is a weird one where it's like totally fine with me on value, but I don't really know what the point is because those guys don't score.
Right. I feel like it's kind of like it's a trade that opens the door for me to make like additional trades. Like if I win on value, can I go make more trades off of that? You know what I mean? But it doesn't.
Yeah. Really I have no opinion on that trade in the sense that it's like, I think it's like, good enough on value that it's fine.
Yeah.
But doesn't really accomplish the objective that I would be trying to accomplish by moving Justin Jefferson. So yeah, I'm not like opposed to it, but I'm also not like jacked about it either. Man, Watson feels like he's two games away from being valued very differently. And I don't know in what direction.
Yeah, right. That's everything you just said is why the trade still remains unresponded. To
I would also be like paralysis like, by analysis.
Because I've already messaged like 15 other people in this league to like try to see if I can make a deal. And it's right. I'm basically like sitting on Jefferson and probably like giving up the season at this point because it's like a pretty, you know, deep lineup and stuff. Or I'm taking this deal and seeing what I can do with it. I sent a DM to see if he could switch Christian Watson for Puka Nacua, but he has not responded to me yet. If he does that, I'll take it.
That like, would be
no yes. question.
That's different for sure.
So we'll see. We'll see. But right now we're just kind of, we're in a holding pattern.
But just at the same time, just for people watching and listening, I don't like the idea of liquidating an elite asset to potentially liquidate the assets I got for him to hopefully improve. Like when you say that out loud, those steps, it just becomes a little wishy-washy for me. So it's not my process. Understand why you're doing it, but I just felt like that last point was big there. We have a question that came early, so I want to honor that still. Hopefully you're still watching, BV. Lucas, he says, what are y'all doing with guys like Jaden Reed? How much do you read into early production when it's probably just, quotation, situational? How do you look at somebody like Reed or any of these short-term blow-up options, even, say, Romeo Doubs on the same team?
I mean, you got to really like Reed. Friend of the show, JJ Zacharias, and absolutely loved Reed. He said that was his late round sleeper that he thought you needed to be into even before the draft. It gets the draft capital you want. He's looked really good wherever he's been on the field. I don't like the fact that he hasn't truly established himself over Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs, but he is also getting unique touches that they aren't getting, which is really fun. So definitely one, I think that he has intriguing value going forward, and he'll definitely carry that value into the offseason, assuming something really bad doesn't happen to him moving forward. But I think that he has enough of a baseline, and Green Bay has shown enough confidence in trying to force feed him the ball that he's a big part of their future moving forward. So yeah, definitely want to be trying to get JM Reed. I don't know if you're going out there and specifically buying Reed or if you're trying to get him as a throw-in in a larger deal. That probably the second route's what you want to be doing, but he's definitely someone who should be a priority add whenever you're trying to do something a little bit bigger.
Yeah, he seems like a good player. It's crazy how he's actually been super promising so far, and he's probably like the 9th or 10th ranked wide receiver in this rookie class. It's been like impressive so far. But yeah, I mean, you buy into the talent. I mean, he's shown us some stuff for the first few weeks to think there's probably something there. So I agree with Lucas. Try to get him added into some larger deals.
Yeah, and again, he's not going to hurt your max points for. I mean, unless something changes right now, you just want to see hopeful gradual improvement, because I think there's a real possibility that he just passes Doubs next year or even later this year. So I think there's definitely opportunity there. So you're right. Again, we always want to be buying rookie and sophomore wide receivers, especially if there is something to be happy about.
Absolutely.
That don't have like massive red flag warnings like Quentin Johnson.
I have an incredible update for you guys. I glanced at my phone. I had a DM. He said I'll throw in Puka. I sent you the offer. It was in my inbox. I hit accept. I traded Justin Jefferson for Puka Nacua, Kyle Pitts, and a mid 2024 first.
Okay. I like we're happier with that. With Puka. Nick Fury says, I'm hearing dump QJ for Reed straight up. Hey, I mean
we're almost there, man.
I would have had to have drafted QJ to make that possible, but you know, scammers get scammed.
The weird thing though with rookie wide receivers, the weird thing with rookie wide receivers is the fact that their value is so tied to how they're performing in terms of their expectations. And Jay Reed had little to no expectations coming in. He's already greatly outperformed them. He's going to be carrying a lot more value from where he was this offseason going into next offseason. QJ is weird, though, because
he's bad.
He hasn't looked good, but people can still look at him and they see the raw potential that's still there. So his value is definitely going to be going down, but I don't think it'll be as low as one might expect whenever we get to the offseason.
Yeah, we're not. No, his value is going to be totally fine in the offseason. He plays with Justin Herbert. Mike Williams will either be off the team or he'll be recovering from an ACL surgery. Quentin Johnson could do absolutely, literally fucking nothing for the entire rest of the season. He's still be worth a mid-second in the offseason. Like, we've all played Dynasty before. Grow up.
Do we not remember Sky Moore's ADP creeping back into the top 80 of best ball drafts in August?
Can I promise you that in your individual league, if you're listening to this, this is one of those portfolio versus one league things, right? If you're playing in 30 leagues and you have, like, I don't know, five Johnsons or whatever, I guarantee you, you're going to move some of them for mid-seconds in the offseason if he does diddly shit the rest of the season.
Right.
If you play in one league and you have Quentin Johnson in that one league, I make no guarantees on what the 11 other people in that league are going to do with Quentin Johnson. I can speak more accurately to the market trend. That being said, if you want to get out on Johnston, there's still people willing to pay. I saw him got straight up for Devontae Adams in a league today. So it's not like it's impossible to move off of Johnston at legitimate value. I would take a perusal, see what's out there, see if the Johnston truthers are still in there. But if they're not, and all you're getting looked at is like mid two value, just hold, because you're just free rolling the rest of the season at this point. Right. And just accept that you're holding a face planter, and then anything else you get is a bonus, right? There's still two ways for this to go. We just talked about two of them, right? He could be the Sky Moore, or he could be the Christian Watson. Mm. Two ships. Night. Pass. Sure.
I'm just planting my flag now early before we become dynasty points. That way I can just leave. I can be like, nah, that was on full tilt. We've grown since then. If he actually ever does blow up. I do like this question here. I feel like this is good because I got to tell you, as a Patrick Mahomes manager in a 4-point passing touchdown league, the most important fantasy league that I have, which is our home league for Jacob and I, he is wildly disappointing. So I'm going to pop this one up here because I like this question. Is Mahomes slightly overrated in a 4-point passing touchdown league? He follows this up. Would you rather Mahomes and 25 first?
Or
Mahomes, yeah. Or 25 first, Chase and Stafford in a 4-point passing league? Like, to me, that's easily the Chase side of that. Like, I wouldn't even think twice about it.
I have a hard time trading away Patrick Mahomes in any situation. It seems pretty even to me. I don't know.
Mahomes side, that one.
Interesting. See, I would take the Chase side.
I'm assuming it's still a 12-team league. And if I'm taking the Mahomes side.
Every time a question gets asked, I guess we should start saying this at the beginning now, but I automatically assume 12-team Superflex, PPR, and tight end premium because we're not sociopaths. Well, I don't know. Paul said he's in a 36-team triple reverse double axe handle triple SoCal league, so I don't know.
It's my only stupid league on MFL, so I have to keep that. I have to keep it on my phone so I can go back and forth between that.
You'd have to revoke your part-time / full-time employeeship here because you don't deal with MFL on this program at all.
I hate it. I hate it with every fiber of my being. I just like the league.
I would rather watch Greg Roman call plays for Patrick Ricard over and over than play on MFL. But no, I think he makes a decent point. I think in 4-point passing touchdown leagues, I definitely think it is easier to supplement point totals, because I know this is a quote unquote down year for Mahomes, which is probably why I'm being a whiny baby about it. But you're seeing a lot more under 20 games than over 20 games in a 4-point passing league. And then you're watching guys like Kendrick Bourne go out and put up 21 points. There's always some guy who can outscore him in a PPR format on a week-to-week basis. So I understand, without the rushing upside, why he might feel overvalued a little bit. And I'm starting to kind of agree, but keep in mind, this has just personally become because it has affected me this year personally in my most important league. I will be man enough to admit that.
I think the key for Mahomes is that
in his
down year, he's the QB5 in points per game in his down year. There's
going to be a time in Patrick Mahomes' dynasty life where his best receivers aren't total trash. that'll be a better time for his fantasy scoring, I think.
Are we sure about that?
I mean, the two receivers that have won the most routes this year are MVS and Sky Moore, who get the privilege of playing their every one of their snaps with Patrick fucking Mahomes and still have like a sub 1 yards per route run, which you'd think would be impossible. So, yeah, I mean, I think that his receivers are going to be better as soon as they stop fucking around and they just start playing their better receivers. Like, I think if they just decided, like, MVS, you're not on the Chiefs anymore, Marquez. Like, Sky, it's been real. Take a seat. Like, I think if they just made Justin Watson the deep threat and they played Rashee Rice 80% of routes and they gave Tony a bunch of gadget routes and, like, maybe Sky gets, like, the scraps, I think they're, like, instantly a better team.
Pesky, I'll say this. I assume those two, yes, it is a 12-team. I want to take the Chase side, but everyone has said the Mahomes side. I did not. I said that I take the Chase side. I just prefaced it with, I am a little bit scorned, but again, I don't think it's a terrible trade there at all. I really don't. Like, Jamar Chase is just him. So, he's just him.
Dynasty wide receiver one, baby.
Had that before the year, and I'm going to stick to that and ride it through. Look, we got a little bit more time left. I know normally we do our player picks, we do our underdog picks and things like that, but with the announcement today, which I'll touch on again at the end for those tuning in halfway and didn't go and check it out yet. I just wanted to get to as many players and questions and things like that as we can on the program, especially with Paul being here, player picks, things like that. We will tweet them out so everyone knows. I will just say that now Lucas has now reclaimed the lead thanks to Dak Prescott's performance. Just absolutely insane. There are a couple other players I want to talk about if you would or wouldn't acquire and at their relative cost, especially from where it was. We're definitely talking about how to rebuild and gain assets that could accrue value in the future, even if it looks just fucking bleak. And it looks bleak for McCorkle Jones. We talk about players that aren't going to add to your max points for too much. McCorkle's one of them because they're talking about him at this point. However,
right about Malik.
Right. We have seen quarterbacks tank in dynasty value, go to a new team a la Baker Mayfield in a better situation. And all of a sudden, you can start turning that into first round picks and more successful and prominent assets for your dynasty team. The question is, are you taking that risk with McCorkle Jones, who had a very good rookie year, remember, and then his OC leaves, and then he gets Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and now he gets Bill O'Brien, but his best wide receiver is Kendrick Bourne and a half-leg Juju Smith-Schuster, and the worst offensive line I might have ever seen. Is it worth buying Mac Jones in the hopes that he goes somewhere else, something happens, something changes, or are you just not even going to bother shedding points to get
for
Mac?
Who? For what? I don't know. Yeah. I think I'll have Mac ranked at like mid-2 value. Feel like you could probably get him pretty fucking cheap. So seems fine to me. I mean, anytime we're talking about a quarterback that has been at that level, that's like where people think he's no longer going to be in the league anymore, I'm always interested in buying them because I think, what if they do stay in the league, Flanch? So yeah, I'll probably be buying some Mac Jones. I still think like there's some, not like fantasy upside potential there, but like, I don't know, quarterbacks that have that good of a rookie year don't usually just end up out of football 2 years later. Like I would be surprised if this is the last we hear of Mac Jones.
Right, QB 18 in 4-point league, 3,800 yards, 22 touchdowns, had some turnovers. But, I mean, definitely potential there. Are you willing to buy here, Paul, or are you just staying clear no matter what?
I mean, I'm willing, depending on the cost. I wouldn't send anything more than the equivalent of like a late second for him, personally. I just don't see – I don't really see the upside. Like, you're going to have to let me in the leagues where people are trading Baker Mayfield for first-round picks because I don't – like, I just – the upside case for Mac Jones is, like, he does end up on another team and he plays kind of okay and he's, like, QB 20 in points per game and you can trade him for, like, an early second, maybe.
Well, the upside is that he's then your QB 2 or your QB 3 and then you just get to start him sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can start him. No, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a bad player to acquire. I guess I'm just saying.
Like, I think if you get Mac Jones for mid second and he spends 2 years as your QB three, and you start him on bye weeks and injuries, like I don't need to ever trade him again. That's like totally reasonable value exchange to me.
That's a good call.
Yeah, Mac, that's fine. I wouldn't want to send a rookie pick for him though. Like, I wouldn't want to send. I would rather get rid of a player that I don't want to get Mac Jones. Like, I only have one second round pick to trade. I just don't want to trade it for Mac Jones.
Yeah. Are you Lancing a third or Mac Jones?
Mac Jones.
Mac Jones.
Just thought I'd check.
So Mac Jones does still hold the record for the highest QBR ever recorded, according to ESPN, for a college football season. Just wanting to throw that fun little thing out there. How do you feel about Mac Jones or Zach Wilson?
Mac Jones.
I would much prefer Mac Jones, to be honest with you.
I kind of like Zach Wilson. I kind of like what I've seen out of him.
What?
Ooh.
Oh, no.
This is why
I was asking it.
Jacob coming in. He likes what he's seen.
Look, I'll admit it. I'm kind of loving this Jets team a little bit right now. Ignore my take. This is just pure, like, raw emotion talking.
Pure vibes.
I've co-managed this main event with Ron Stewart and Liam Murphy, which has been endlessly entertaining because all we do in our chat is just, like, yell at each other every week. And the team wins. Like, we're in first place. but we all just, like, bicker about start sits. And Liam was so adamant that we needed to bench Breece Hall this week because they were going to lose by so much that Ron and I got really tilted. And we decided to side bet him out of our start sit. Even though we were two and he was one, we were like, fine, start whoever you fuck you want. We're side betting you Breece versus Ayuk. And then after Ayuk sucked in the early game, I was like, double or nothing on Breece getting minimum 15. So then it brought our side bet up to 40. And then I put that 40 on the Jets money line because I was like, the Jets are literally going to win this game. So on the Breece Hall touchdown, before that, he was sitting like 14.6 or something. And then that touchdown put him over. So that last touchdown got me the double or nothing 40 and the Jets money line. So I was absolutely amped on this side bet spree with Liam and Vegas. Anyway, point being, I've now sold on Zach Wilson, I guess. I don't know. He has like interesting tools. Like, I still think he has like fantasy upside if he was ever any good. Like, he runs a little bit, he throws deep. I don't know.
It was pretty impressive how Zach Wilson came away with four Eagles turnovers in that game. I got to give him that, especially with those really well those 18 points. I mean, just a really plucky performance.
He plays with heart, man. I don't know what to say. He's got
He just wins.
He just finds a way to win. You know, he's played the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Eagles, and it's resulted in two wins and one loss that was robbed by the refs. That's a franchise quarterback to me.
Look, when it comes to Zach Wilson, wins are a QB stat. Apparently, so are defensive stats as well. So there's
he
that.
He willed his team to play better defense with his spirit.
We're gonna end the show with something we don't normally do. But Matthew, if you're new here, I will say we don't do a lot of non-superflex cues, but you're here. So we're going to do that. Brian also says Moxie. He has Moxie. I really like that.
He does have Moxie.
This is going to be a really...
I can't tell if I'm doing a bit or not. I'll figure it out eventually.
We'll find out next week if you're doing a bit or not.
I don't even know.
Look, the answer for this is going to be no. Like, I'll just go ahead and answer this. Lost A-Rich and only have Dak. Would you give up Swift plus DK for Diggs and T-Law? No, because you don't need a second quarterback. Right? Like, I approach one quarterback.
Just go trade some fab for Zach Wilson. I mean, he's the answer, clearly.
He's got Moxie for your squad. My answer is going to be no. I would not do that in a one QB league at all, even though it's not our specialty. I mean, hey,
DK and Diggs are not that far apart. They're certainly not Swift apart. Lawrence in a one quarterback league is like borderline worthless to me.
Yeah. And also hashtag Jacob's back in on Swift, and we hashtag love to see it. Herm says Zach Wilson got that dog in him, and that dog equals good defense. Yeah. Hey, as long as he keeps finding Garrett Wilson, we're going to be okay. Look, we have a hard out today with time. We're almost at that. I once again, I just wanted to shout out Paul. You can find him at Paul_DFF. You're going to want to go and catch an episode of the Factory Tour. I know I have been.
Just recorded an episode of the Factory Tour.
With our own Jacob Sandy.
I know the cast pretty well.
Yeah.
He's a big Zach Wilson truther. It's kind of weird.
Love Zach Wilson.
That didn't come up. I promise. We didn't talk about Zach Wilson.
I know.
I will tease this. We talked about, I think that we talked a lot about Paul's just firing team situations at me. And what would you do if your team was like this? What would you do for Klondike Bar? And I think that I gave Paul an anecdote of something that I'm doing on one particular team that was among the more creative strategies that he'd ever heard. And so I would tune in for that one. Sometimes we innovate.
Yeah, I'm going to need Paul to clip that one for sure. It's just going to be, send it to me. I'll do it. But look, again, I just want to shout out Paul. It's always a great time when you hop on here. This was the last couple of weeks, we have done episodes that are not way outside, but definitely outside of what we normally do. And it's just to really give a taste for what's to come, because we're going to be hammering these almost every week now. Because as I mentioned before, if you missed it, this is the last episode of the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast as you know it. The great people over at fantasypoints.com have given us an unreal opportunity to lead their Dynasty Fantasy Football video content. So that is where you'll be able to find. You will still be able to get this again the next day and reruns, etc., on Full Tilt, the Full Tilt Devi Show, the Fantasy Walkabout when it returns. That is still going to be live at Full Tilt Fantasy Football on YouTube, but the live stream for this show will be at the Fantasy Points YouTube and at fantasypoints.com. Shout out to everyone once again who's made this happen. That's Billy, Tom Lee, everybody, man. I know there's people I'm going to forget, so I'm not going to list too many names because someone's going to at me and be real rude. But we couldn't do it without everyone tuning in and listening every week and just really helping us get here, man. It's been phenomenal so far. Myself, that's Thomas Tipple at El Nostra Thomas. I got my own at right this week. We have Lucas Gilbert at L Gilbert FF. I spelt his at right this week. That's at Jacob Sanderson. He is Jacob Sanderson, the man behind Thinking About Thinking. And again, Paul Patterson, the man at Paul_DFF. Herms comes in with the best comment of the night. Couldn't do it without Zach Wilson, to be honest. Shout out Zach Wilson, the new mascot. Heading in the rest of the year for Dynasty Point. Guys, next week, you'll be able to tune in live at the same time over at Fantasy Points for the new Dynasty Points. Fantasypoints.com is going full tilt, and you absolutely love to see it. So for everyone here, for all of you, again, thank you. Remember that clear eyes, full hearts can never lose, and your best days, they're always spent tilting. Good night, everybody.